good spell. We're John and Mary on a good spell. It's off and on and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go on, give them a tweet. The DS106 good spell show.
Bypass off and keep talking. We should be live. So, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the DS106 Good Spell. Flatsing splendidly since 2013 on the DS106 Radio for Life. This is one of 106 bullets, mantras and koans that explore the open online course Digital Storytelling 106. Meditations and rambles about education, openness, open education, art, fun and learning. I am John Johnson, and with me as usual is Mariana Finnis. Hi Mariana.
Hello John, how are you?
I think I'm okay actually, not too bad. Had a quiet weekend, a few last minute grabs of files and things to get this together, but pretty good. Yourself?
I am okay, same as you, having a relaxing Sunday, which has been lovely, although they sound like they are in a cave today. Oh, we sound like we're in a cave, or we are, Rochelle. We are in a very secret cave.
I wonder, I've moved into my kitchen to avoid the traffic noises, and also because I've lost the table, and I used to always use my daughter's bedroom, and she's now moved out quite a while ago, but we're slowly removing bits and pieces of furniture for her room, so there's no table in there anymore. So it means people don't get the atmospheric cruel road traffic.
Well, I think you're just going to have to do something about your studio then.
But the kitchen is all clear walls, there's nothing, and I'm guessing that's maybe creating a bit of echo. I suppose I could build a cardboard box on the table here and pile cushions around, but I'm probably not going to do that. So,
Kathy tells us that she's listening while she's priming and painting a Prisoner 106 bungalow. Have you seen her around the village painting all the bungalows in funny colours?
We've seen quite a lot of activity on DS106. I've only really paid attention to the prisoner one and the Bergenon one. I think there's one or two other courses going on at the moment as well, but that seems quite enough. Anyway, this is episode 10 of our summer term, I guess, of the Good Spell. And the bullet for today is make art bub for its own sake without expectations, and if you're honest, learning this will take a few lifetimes.
Now, I thought that was a nice one for our last one.
Well, we're aiming for a few lifetimes. The bub bit I'm presuming is a reference to a well-kent 106 participant, shall we say.
A very talented one.
Yeah.
An ex-movie star.
Yeah. Maybe famous or notorious or a mix of the two. Hopefully not listening. But talkie Tina.
Talkie Tina say, make art, bub.
Yeah. So why did you... What did you have? I mean, I know it's going now. We're going back quite a long time. But where did this come from?
Well, I think that there is that kind of world that opens up when you first do DS106 and you learn about all of these different things that you can learn about. And you run through and you go through each week and you think you've learned everything there is to know about, I don't know, design or visual storytelling, you know, because it feels like you've done so much that you must know everything there is to know. Cause certainly for my first one, it was, you know, a kind of all-encompassing thing. And then actually when you stop and you go, actually, you know, it's just going to take forever. Mm. So if you don't, you know, when you add the digital to the storytelling as well, then of course you have all the tools that you learn that then disappear, all the things that you love but then you can't find again to help you tell stories, all of these things. So it's constantly changing and constantly adding things. The more sophisticated tools that we use, as you and I have spoken often, you know, Photoshop and various other things, you know, they can take a whole lifetime to learn. And then if you add on top of that the kind of your craft as a storyteller, which, you know, again, is something that, particularly when it isn't your day job, so I think that's really what was behind it, you know. And then underneath that is the question, can it be learned at that kind of depth? We're on just I'm going to say that controversially, I'm going to say just online.
I don't know if it's just online, it's on a 10-week course or something like this. And I know as an undergraduate course, you wouldn't expect it that's probably why I have the continual problem with using the word art, because, you know, if you think of an artist or somebody who's a serious painter or musician, for instance, In the run up to starting this show tonight, I was playing a few tunes from the back catalogue, including a couple of things by Rochelle, singing some of other people's songs, but also one of her own, which we'll be talking about a wee more later on, this Trailer of Woe, and, you know, something by Viv. And these people are musicians.
And
I'm not going to get to that sort of level. I'm not going to get to that level in a lifetime, let's be honest. But I'm not certainly not even going to scratch it in 10 weeks or, you know, a bit of time on the internet.
Because I think that's what you bring out is the kind of diversity, the difference that often there is. I remember early on, you know, when we started to talk about this idea of, you know, was it art? Was it, you know, were they just artifacts, or, you know, what was it that we were doing? I remember, I think it was Alan possibly saying, you know, not everybody comes to the S106 with the same kind of purpose. You have some people who say, what I do is art, and they basically come as artists already to learn the digital element, maybe, or to build or to have a community of people that they can keep learning. And then you have all the way to the undergraduates that you're talking about, where they may be starting from zero, but some of them may not be. Some of them may be doing a kind of, you know, some kind of IT thing, some kind of design type thing, so they already know a lot about the technical stuff, and maybe they need to work more on the storytelling side of things. And then there's you and me, I don't know. We have a day job and then we come to the S106.
Well, I think that's actually the strength. I mean, what I'm interested in really in DS106 is looking at it as an example of how to do learning online. And that's what keeps me, apart from the fun, that's what keeps me interested, is seeing how that works, and just thinking about it and wondering about it. That's it. There's people in this for all sorts of different angles. I mean, you've talked before about how it's changed the way you teach, quite considerably. It feeds fairly directly into my day job.
Well, but I never came into it with that idea.
Yeah.
Fair. You know, and each day, you know, I think this is the lovely thing, that, you know, when I came into it, to me it was a fun thing that I was going to do because I was interested, and clearly I was interested in the pedagogy of it, all of those things, because of my day job too. But you know, my initial intent had really been I'm going to do this course and I'm going to learn about this thing that seems really fun and I know nothing about it. And then, you know, there's layers of that over the years, really now, as you say, that, you know, have impacted very directly on my work, have led to all sorts of, you know, collaborations, all sorts of things that I never imagined would happen. So that there is that too, of course. And then, of course, it also takes a few lifetimes when you add to that the how does it work, how do we design it, what are the things that, in fact, we were having a conversation with Rochelle and some other people on Twitter talking about, you know, what is you know, what is it that makes it work? You know, some people were talking about the recipe, or somebody else was, you know, talking about identifying exactly, you know, how it works. And actually, I think that it's a very difficult thing. I think it was Ron saying on Twitter, you know, that sometimes it's actually quite slippery to see whether, you know, he called it the magic, I think, where the magic is. So it's just interesting ideas about, you know, what is it that keeps us involved in it and keeps us working with it, and in a sense creating it, because in a sense we create it, don't we?
Yeah. Well, at the moment, lots of it seems just to be shooting off by itself, and obviously there are people who are key to different bits of DS106 and put in a lot of work. I mean, yourself with the Daily Crate, Rochelle in the Bergenon thing, Prisoner 106 in the Prisoner 106 course, which, you know, both of these courses are completely detached from a university or anything else.
But it's also, of course, not just the particular offerings, as it were, that we're doing, but also the how we could keep engaged through our blogs and through everything that is going on as best we can and at different times. And I guess, you know, it's the old question that, you know, Jim was asking the last time when he did the Noir 106 premiere with us, you know, and he went, but why, you know, I'm surrounded by a bunch of fun junkies. Yeah. No, you guys, it's more serious than that. And I think it is, you know, because it speaks back to that thing of you're constantly learning something, you know, something new. You see how it fits back to what, you know, to our teaching in our case. And of course, all of that, all of those threads of the relationships that we build with each other that often are not visible to the kind of public side of the S106 for those who are not participating, who may just be looking at the assignment bank or at the Daily Create or at whatever, you know, or at the Prisoner 106. I think it's kind of more than that.
I think if you are, you know, in some ways attempting to teach with technology, it's a good way just to keep various bits of your toolbox sharp, whether that's just, you know, blogging or tweeting or, you know, finding out about files or giving somebody a hand with something. It's just an excuse to take the tools out of the box and, you know, sharpen them up and do something with them.
Is this something art or isn't it? No, I'm sorry, but we're going to need to settle this question before the 106th episode.
Yeah, well, I think you've got a good quote here. It's quite a long one that you put in the Google document. It goes, some of the forms they develop include pastiche, another name for mashup. And this has a notorious place in the history of visual media as an uncritical postmodern form that takes artistic work but turns it into a somewhat... Oh, I can't pronounce that word.
You want me to go to try?
Yeah, you give it...
Simulacrum, I would say.
Simulacrum for the purposes of mere entertainment or sometimes commercial reasons. Certainly pastiche actually requires no critical artistic intention these days, although it might have to begin with. Unlike, say, the struggle of Bacon painting the Figaro, or Godard pursuing a deliberate programme of semiclasm. You're killing me. Bringing together clashing images and sounds, or careful tracing all the conventions of documentary and then systematically breaking each one. So this
comes the sort of background. So the sort of day that this paragraph is referring to is not the S106. Mm. It's in reference to something else. But it is somebody who you know, who's writing about the work of the Luce and Wertari, the people that do all the rhizomatic education and the sort of, you know, that kind of that side of things. And they clearly, you know, they had a sort of complex philosophy about, you know, about everything. They had a view about everything. But what was interesting to me, I was reading this in the context of something else, a paper that I'm writing about this, and And it was really interesting to kind of, you know, apparently the Lusang Watari have done a huge amount of stuff around art and what makes art. And, you know, clearly they see art as something that would be purposeful, that would have some kind of a social impact, that has a kind of sense of, you know, like the examples that you just read at the end of that. You know, people who have dedicated their lives to produce something, you know, to mm-hmm. do something that is their life's work. And I guess they are not as positive about the kind of thing that we are talking about, which is, you know, that I would say we do a lot of in the S106. You know, this notion, it just made me, I read it and I stopped, and you know, the idea of pastiche I found really offensive, let's be honest. Mm. But it made me think, I kind of thought, actually, isn't it, it's interesting, the idea that, you know, it is what we are producing, just uncritical pastiche that turns artistic work into a simulacrum, which is just fake, basically, isn't it? That's what mm-hmm. it means. Simulation of, you know, a simulation of art for mere entertainment. And I, you know, it really made me stop to think.
Well, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with taking something out of a piece of art for the purposes of mere entertainment.
I think they did, and I think they're basically saying they're kind of judging it as not art.
But they're also linking it as a moral judgment, so you would probably say that somebody like Jeff Koons, the American who makes statues of himself and his ex-wife in compromising positions, or gold statues of Michael Jackson and his chimpanzee, I would have thought they would have probably disapproved of him too. I don't know. I guess
they are talking about this idea of, you know, what you do, if you're going to call it art, somehow has to have this, you know, they call it critical artistic intention. I think that's really interesting. We don't talk about that sort of thing at all. I mean, we just get on and do stuff, don't we? And I guess it's enough, right? If you know, if you're going to also be talking about art appreciation, and you're also going to be talking about the philosophy, and you know, then of course you just wouldn't, you know, you it would be more than a few lifetimes then. Yeah. But it did make me wonder about, you know, the where we started. Certainly both you and I, where we would say, you know, we used to call them artifacts. And, you know, and we've often had that kind of hesitation to say, is what I make art? And so my reflection is, maybe it's because implicit in my definition, in what I kind of, in the back of my mind when I think about it, the idea of art is something about, you know, having a kind of critical artistic intention in what I make, which in a way is kind of what David was saying when he did that week when you were away. He was talking about how the kind of history of, you know, musicals, mashups and things, how, you know, originally there was a kind of political, ideological, a kind of purpose that said, you know, we are doing this because we are protesting. And he even, if I remember rightly, connected it, the early days of the S106 with that, because he was saying, actually, you know, if you think about it, part of what the ideology was about, you know, rebelling against the kind of more traditional and mechanical way of educating people. So it's interesting, isn't it? It sort of makes you stop and think.
Yeah, well, I think that one of the things that's nice is there's a crossover for everybody between the serious and the silly in DS106. Somebody like David, if you read his blog, obviously thinks about education, higher education, and politics really deeply. So you can be, you know, somebody blogging like that, but, you know, somebody else is making funny noises with audacity. It doesn't necessarily need to be deep at that point, I don't think, you know. There's plenty of room for a broad church,
and I wonder whether we get, closer to, you know, this notion of the what is it that makes it work, you know, and if there was one thing, what would that one thing be? Which is the thing that often people ask about the S106, and you know, and I do wonder whether, you know, in a way, it's almost you know, kind of paradoxically, the very fact that there isn't one thing is the one thing. Mm. Oh my goodness, I'm profound on our last show for the season. But you know what I mean.
Reaching new depths.
It sounds silly, but actually, you know, it's kind of the idea of the broad church that actually we don't talk about it. We don't go, you know, yes, this is the S106, this isn't, or this kind of person or that, or this is what we stand. You know, there is none of that. But almost by definition, that very thing, that very sense of broad church, of you know, that there isn't a one thing, maybe or could be the thing that actually keeps us all engaging in our own way. I don't know whether that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the fact that there is some light stuff. It's like a primary school teacher, and back in the day, I'm sure people don't do this anymore, but colouring in sheets.
Yeah.
Wonderful thing, you know, which can just be, you know, a line drawing that some the children will colour in. And if kids do that at the end of a day sometimes, they seem to get great satisfaction out of it. And it's like, you know, I come home from a hard day's work and you animate a GIF. You know, you have a look at a bit of a movie and you find a wee GIF and you take it out. And it's you know, I'm not Francis Bacon at this point at all. but there's something quite relaxing about it. And then you can click it, fire it up to Tumblr or your blog or something and put it into a bit of a story or things like that. And, you know, it can be good fun and... Yeah, you perhaps sharpened a tool.
And I guess what you're speaking to is, so it's a way to keep your tools sharp, as it were. Mm-hmm. I just come in and it might be a relaxing thing, because like a painter might, you know, come in and do a few sketches, for example. So it's something about practicing with the tools of the trade. And that can be just a fun thing, something that has no kind of critical intent, or, you know, nothing terribly significant or meaningful beyond actually changing your mental state, which in itself is pretty significant and meaningful. But that's, you know, maybe a different story. But that doing that enables us, and I think there's something in this, enables us to put those tools off the trade to a different use should we want it.
Yeah.
Like, for example, take David as an example, and you were talking about his blog and how often it's, you know, really kind of very serious stuff about what's going on in, you know, higher education in the UK. And but for example, he will use the S106 skills to make, say, you know, like that animated GIF that is about the year of the MOOC that he used for various presentations and other people have to be critical of MOOCs and, you know, ex-MOOCs and what they stand for. So I guess it's that, isn't it? You can, on the one hand, you shape your skill and you can do that in any way, and then you can put that to a use, but you don't have to. I guess what we're saying is all of that can be art.
Yeah. Oh, artifact. another wee thing that you say here is you're talking about, you know, feedback and getting feedback from other people. And one of the kind of nice things about DS106 is you get a lot of positive feedback. And, you know, it's just, you said, is it, you know, evaluating your own work from a detached perspective. And I'm wondering if that's somewhere that there's, again, another chance of it, the course to fall down a wee bit or not fulfil its potential, is that you don't, you know, you get this nice stuff. And I was reading the Observer newspaper today, and it's the Tech Monthly bit. And they were into a huge interview with this guy who is in the process of building the next big thing in PC gaming, which looks quite interesting. But I'm not a gamer, but I just this sort of jumped out at me because he said he puts a lot of information out about what he's doing and shares it, and there's lots of people really excited. And he says he's deleted Twitter from his phone, and he says that you'd think people saying "I'm excited about your game" would be motivational. But actually creativity and hard work is driven by ambition, and ambition isn't helped by constant affirmation.
I love that.
You also have to get to a place where you're unhappy with everything.
I love that.
That
is so unusual to hear people say that.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Read that again.
Yeah, so he says, you think people saying I'm excited for your game would be unmotivational, but actually creativity and hard work is driven by ambition, and ambition isn't helped by constant affirmation. You almost have to get to a place where you're unhappy with everything.
To keep having that drive to keep going.
Yeah. I saw something about this actually in relates to a couple of things I'd read earlier in the week, which of course I haven't got links for handy, but and one was from another podcast. But it was the idea that, you know, children aren't necessarily, if you just praise them all the time, that's great, that's not useful, you know, it goes mm-hmm. against the whole idea of a formative assessment.
I have been, there's been quite a lot of stuff, you know, this whole thing about the growth mindset and things. Certainly in my little filter bubble, there's been quite a lot of it. And, you know, that together with the whole cult of personality thing drives me up the wall, because I know from my profession that, you know, the whole thing about personality is really a tenuous construct at best, and the whole thing about the growth mindset from a experimental research point of view is also really quite limited, and it's precisely what you're talking about, which is that the kind of feedback that's needed isn't this growth mindset. Always gets interpreted as you just have to be really positive, you know, positive about the failures. Great, you failed. I love you. Good job. Actually, no, you know, it's not so good you failed. Let's do it again to see if you can do it better. Maybe yes, but, you know. And it's just interesting how in the context of, I think, educational technology, you know, and generally an open education more so, there is this kind of exuberant positivity that happens where it isn't okay to just go, you know what, it's rubbish.
Yeah.
And we spoke about, we talked about the theatre and, when I used to work at the drama centre, you know, when the students, the actors, you know, they took notes for their performance, you would sit and cry. Yeah. You'd sit and cry. And these are young people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're not messing around. They have to get the performance, and they have to get the level of performance that's necessary in order for you to be, it's the ambition thing, right? For you to have a successful play, a successful something. And I guess, going back to your point about, you know, is this a place, an area that if we, you know, if we wanted to look at how to make the S106 better, we could look at, it's this sense of, you know, if it doesn't really have that, because, you know, we kind of get a bit of that when we make the radio programs and things, because then there is the pressure of the performance thing. But even then, we can pretty much do what we want. There isn't a kind of, you know, real sense of pressure. And then the kind of, you know, the to what extent, and this for me goes back to the art on the couch thing, which was my little experiment about this idea, you know, to try and see if I could offer people some more attention to their work and more, I would say constructive, you know, thoughtful feedback that went beyond the big fan that I always make fun of Jim when he does that, you know, big fan.
Yeah.
But I failed miserably with that. Shall I tell myself good job? Because I have not found the time.
Yeah.
I have not found the time to be able to dedicate the attention that is needed to write the kind of quality feedback that I set myself to do, which is the stuff around the sort of art critique, which is the kind of thing, the same kind of thing as what the students in the drama center get. That sense of really attending to something. We can't do that when you come back at the end of the day and you're knackered.
But I think
tired, I should say, for those for our international audience.
Look it up. The thing I think about that is perhaps for folk doing an actual course in a university, that what it would be a very good idea would be to take that and cut down. You know how usually they've got to do so many assignments a week. It's probably 3 or 4 10-points worth. We'll say, no, actually, 3 of your points have got to every week be a piece of serious work looking at somebody else's stuff.
Actually, that is really nice.
You know, I mean, I think that's the way I would try and do it. I mean, I know here that sort of earlier in the year I ran a sort of blogging boot camp for primary school, mostly primary school, some adults as well across Scotland. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to try and get people commenting on other people's work. Mm-hmm. And that's the hard bit, because you give them, you know, a task to do. I want you to do this with your blog this week, write about this or something, here's an idea, and go out and look at other people's stuff. The "and" bit always kind of falls off, because it's not the focus on what you're doing. You know, the giving feedback's hard. The other thing this makes me think of is a friend of mine who is very involved in games-based learning. And he wrote a really good blog post, I think, about this failure idea, you know, the idea from taken from startups and all the rest of it, that, you know, we should teach children to fail and fail early and all the rest of it, and encourage them to fail and pick themselves up. And he's very interested in using them, what's he call it, COTS, off-the-shelf software, you know, games in learning. Open-ended ones that are not designed for education. And what he said about these games are that they're really good games are designed so that you don't have a big failure. That there's always, you're always making small incremental gains in learning stuff.
Yes, that's so a lot of
It keeps you stuck in this game. Keeps you, you know, because that's the whole point of the game.
Because you succeed at the, you succeed enough. That
yeah,
it's kind of like my golf. That is succeed enough times that you keep at it.
Yeah.
But that's interesting, because it makes me think the times when I have got really frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
With stuff in the S106, you know, and I'm learning things, is when there isn't that kind of incremental gain.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's that whole thing about it has to be at that kind of optimum level where there is enough challenge that keeps you going, but not so much challenge that just distresses you and then you walk away. And I guess the younger you are, the harder that, you know, that balance is. And I guess people who design games know about that order to, for the very commercial reason of, you know, wanting the game to be successful, I guess.
Yeah, and it becomes so, you know, it's quite often people have used games as an example of, you know, failure and difficulty and things like this. And this guy, Derek Robertson, says, no, he says, that's not what they're about. You know, they're about learning and providing a really good path to learn so you keep doing it. So, yeah, I think that's quite interesting.
I really like your idea of making that. And in fact, I'm thinking about the University of Denver people. I've seen that they are being asked to do critiques, not of each other's work, I don't think, but they're doing critiques of, you know, different stories that they see. And that's, I guess, a step in that direction. So then you learn how to critique stuff that is detached. And then the next stage would be, okay, so you're doing your kind of normal commenting. I've seen this, I've seen that. But then, you know, also then do an in-depth critique. And actually that becomes an assignment. I really like that idea. We should trial it at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it just would make sense. And the other wee thing, and we're running past time, I'm afraid, but the other thing I'd quite like to touch on is I saw that somebody on Google Plus had put up this photograph that was buzzing around the internet of a small child, 9 years old, in the Philippines, but I can't remember. But he's doing his homework outside on a bit of homemade bench by the light of McDonald's while his mum works somewhere else, because he's in a single parent family. And you know how great it was that this child was doing this, and I think it's the boy himself now has been, you know, because it went around the world, lots of people are helping and all the rest of it, but it was the idea was this is you know, this is a sort of grit that you need to succeed in education,
right?
And I just felt immediately that I saw that this was another way to avoid talking about the attainment gap that's caused by poverty in this country, mm-hmm. and it's really it wasn't, I presume it wasn't designed, but it's, you know, a photographer has seen this and posted it somewhere, but people who are of that mindset, you know, you don't, I mean, if you look at it, who succeeds? Usually people who have successful families, who have, you know, access to good stuff and all the rest of it, and this idea of education, which goes along with the failure thing, I think that you need to have this grit in education. I think is a really dangerous one, because one that makes people who are successful feel better about themselves and us to admire them sometimes for the wrong reasons. You know, he's done really well because he's got so much grit and determination to get to the top. Well, actually, he got the ski lift halfway up. Well, the rest of us were setting off, and some of us, some poor souls, were actually making their boots. You know, it's just, I think that's another push back again, this idea of failure and grit, you know?
You're talking about all of the kind of the stuff that is backgrounded when the narrative is this kind of heroic narrative. And a lot of what we do in education kind of ends up being like that, because some of this other stuff isn't popular and isn't easy to fix, you know, and we have that frame of, you know, it's like people asking, you know, what is the one thing that makes the S106 successful, and, you know, can we package it? You know, it's why I think it was one of these early images of the S106, you know, put it in the box, and can we put it in the box? And there is that desire to do that. And to be fair, you know, and this is a belief, this is not, you know, this is just how I see it. I think as soon as you try to put it in the box, you've destroyed it.
Also all the things that people who take up DS106, you know, some of them have managed to get to college, others of them have got great internet connections, a bit of free time, some good software, all these sorts of things, and a lifetime of absorbing language. Even if I can't pronounce words, I can usually make a guess at what they mean. And that makes it quite easy to access. It's that the open education resources is only one part of this argument. You can give people Wikipedia, but they need to be able to read, they need to be able to, you know, have a great, and beyond actually being able to do things, they need to have a culture that says, yeah, this is worth doing, and all sorts of
other. That's an interesting thought. I was just looking at Twitter and seeing, you know, Rochelle is saying, you know, she wonders whether when we actually pick something up and then do something with it from somebody else, you know, like I picked up your images, you know, your quirky images, and I want to use them everywhere and plaster my whole house with them and go, you know, I'm going to give them everybody for Christmas presents, and, you know, that in a way that is saying, that is offering you feedback.
Oh, yeah, I think this...
But presumably, equally, and I think this may be what she's going to, equally, all the people that I just go... I just see, I may make a quick comment, but I don't then go, I'm going to use that, then those people could, you know, can interpret that as feedback too, but it's very indirect. Really. It's not critiquing, really, is it?
Yeah.
It's just saying, I'm going to take that and use it. I don't know. It's an interesting idea.
I've always thought that was the best sort of comment to get.
Yes.
You know, I took this thing that you did and I made it my own way, or I took this idea and I did this with it.
It is true, and we feel, and sometimes if the opposite, you know, if that doesn't happen, then you go, well, what's happening with these people? They've done nothing with my thing.
Yeah.
They're wrong. Yeah. My stuff is awesome.
Yeah. I just must have put it out at the wrong time. Everybody was asleep.
I think that too sometimes.
Everybody was asleep. Anyway.
Okay. We could go on for a long time on this. This is interesting, this topic.
We're at 40 minutes of a half-hour show at the moment. We did get part of the DS106 thing. This is the Bergenon trailer, and I've got a wee bit of audio that I was going to use just to play us out on. So I guess we'll kind of wrap up and then just play that and I'll hang up.
This is
Trailer of Woe, and I believe there may even be something about it, but it's a translation of a poem, and then Nana Lou has rewritten it to fit in the village and the Bergenons.
There is a post, and we could probably, when we get the podcast up, we can put the links to some of these things, so then people can read if they are not familiar with the story. But I must say, the song is so beautiful. I think it just sort of stands on its own, even if you're not following the story at all. And it's Viv and Dave who have done the music, I believe.
Oh right, okay. So we're going to wrap up for the summer holidays now.
We're going to come back, and we're going to have a couple of specials out during the summer, aren't we?
Summer specials, I think.
Summer specials.
that sounds good. And we'll probably maybe have one from the village and one from the is that a trailer park?
A trailer. Yes, it's just a trailer in a very, 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 very big farm.
Right. Anyway.
And it has to be for all the things that are going on in there.
So. We shall return over the summer. So I'm going to play this Trailer of Woe, and we'll see people sometime, or they'll hear us. Cheers, folks.
Through trials great and sorrow, her grey head now and and her life's sun is setting behind a darksome cloud. And still she's fondly longing, oh, would the day were come to see your shining faces at the Bergeron trail. It's 40 days and more now since from the trailer he set, and in the village waters cast forth your fishing net. And though you got a number to fill your house with store, you still must ne'er forget your trailer. To hear it, or tongues that tell to tell, come join with me in singing the woes that did befell. How hundreds of our people from hill and glen were torn, and far across the ocean from their love. Farewell, dear friends and kinsfolk, wherever you may roam, both young and old in exile, far from your trailer home. And oh, remember Nana Lou, and laid her sirens among. 'Twas cruel and wrong, and sorrow first waked her soul to sing.
Spell. We John and Mary are the good spell. It's off and on, and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Inter, lecture conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go on, give them a tweet. The DS 106 Good Spell Show.